Welcome to Indie Business Radio for February 9th, 2009. I'm your host, Donna Maria, and you have arrived at the one place where we empower you to enjoy your life, build your business, and have your way. Today's media partner is the Indie Shopping Network, the only e-portal combining live online television and chat, connecting you with the best in indie and handmade products. Join us this Friday, February 13th, when our featured indie will be Rachel Lane of Barcelona Bath & Body in Grapevine, Texas. Rachel makes premium quality, handcrafted room sprays, embellished sachets, soaps, and scented soy candles to enhance every aspect of your home and your life. Learn more and join us at indieshopping.tv. As we move further into the new presidential administration, we're seeing a lot of things left over from the old one. We all know about the bailout, which was signed into law last year, but now a new administration is left to implement it. Well, the bailout isn't the only government action that's in a similar predicament. A similar situation is occurring with the Consumer Product Safety Improvement Act, which was signed into law by President Bush in August 2008. While it became law last year, it wasn't until a few weeks ago that very small business owners became aware of its far-reaching effects. It has been described as a well-meaning law, but one that is not very well thought out, particularly where its impact on very small businesses is concerned. Michael Kushner, lead partner with the Orange County, California Kushner Law Firm, PLC, says he wants to do something about it. Specifically, the firm is planning to file a class action suit to challenge the constitutionality of the new law, which he says is so overbroad that it will drastically reduce consumer choice, put thousands of small businesses out of business while yielding absolutely no benefit in return. Attorney Kushner joins us from his Orange County offices, and later in the show, we'll have some small business owners on the show who are actually impacted by the law. Welcome to Indie Business Radio, Michael.
Thank you. I appreciate it. If I could just make one correction, though, the lawsuit that we'll be filing is, at this point, not going to be a class action. It's just going to be a multi-party lawsuit. We may, at some point, seek to be classified as a party, but that's not how we're going into it at the initial outset.
Great. Thank you for that clarification. If you're listening to the show, you can email your questions at info@indiebusinessradio.com, or if you'd like, you can join the live chat going on right now at indiebeauty.com. Just click on the link at the top of the page for the radio show. So, Michael, tell us in broad terms, what is the Consumer Product Safety Improvement Act? What does it do?
Okay, I'm going to be as broad as I can because the statute itself, as you probably can be aware, all of our laws are written in a complicated fashion. But basically, it stemmed from last year's scare of toys coming in that were manufactured in China containing lead paint. And if you'll recall, in 07, that was a big deal. And even in 08, I think Mattel Toys was affected by it. And so in response to that, Congress decided that they wanted to try to have a law or pass a law that would more strictly control the amount of lead contaminant particles in items that are going to be used or sold to children. And lead being the main one, there's also something called flatulence, which is a chemical that is used in the processing of plastic. I'm going to focus more on lead because for at least most of our clients, that's the big issue here. And as a parent myself and every one of my clients, being a small business owner, that in and of itself is not a big deal. We all want to protect children. We don't want lead in any of our products, including, never mind our children, we don't want them in our own. The problem is, what this law does is it seeks to limit to, starting February 10th, which is coming up tomorrow, to 600 parts per million lead content in anything that is to be exclusively used by or is designed for or sold to children. The problem with that is it's so overbroad. It requires so much testing and certification that is, with the way the law is written, just simply impossible to meet. There's no clarification as to, for example, if you purchase T-shirts from a company, let's just pick one, Fruit of the Loom or Hanes, and you were to purchase T-shirts and then, have a silk screen or print on them, are you now subject to new requirements for certification and testing? Or if a manufacturer creates a zipper and, he gets testing and then that zipper is put on a line of pants, does the pant manufacturer now have to do new testing?
Wow.
no clarification as to those things, and it threatens to shut down pretty much all the small businesses, all those mom and pop businesses out there that make children's apparel, for example, are absolutely threatened. If you'll give me a minute, and in a few minutes, I'd like to talk about the cost of this testing because there's a lot of misinformation out there. But we've gone out and done some analysis and gotten some quotes, and even if you can find a lab that is now certified to do this testing, we've gotten prices ranging from $1,000 to $40,000, and per SKU item, per line. And if you're producing a million components, that's you can amortize that cost, and it's not a big deal. But if you're producing 100 pieces at a time, that could be extremely expensive to drive you out of business. And we've got we're looking at billions of dollars in our economy at the very wrong time being lost because of this law. So to make a very long story somewhat short, the law itself and the goal in mind is a wonderful goal, and we're all for it, but there's so many ambiguities and so much overbroadness in this that it threatens to shut down an entire segment of our economy, and it just wasn't well thought out. And if I could give one last example, paint in the United States has been mandated to be lead-free, I think, since I was a child. And certainly the paint used by silk screeners in Orange County and other parts of California and all throughout our country are going to be compliant, and yet this testing is required. There's nothing in the law that says, for paints that are manufactured in the U.S., you don't have to get this testing. And that would be something simple that they could have amended, they could have added as an amendment to this that would make it more reasonable. We have a senator out there, Senator DeMint, has put out a proposed amendment which makes a lot of sense. Henry Waxman has already said that he's not interested in pursuing that, but I'm getting ahead of myself. I'm a lawyer. I talk a lot.
Oh, that's okay. No, I appreciate your overview. I think that you narrowed it down quite well. We've got lead and phthalates, as you said, although I may be pronouncing it incorrectly. But Michael,
I'm not a scientist.
Oh, well, at least we know what that is. It's something that we don't want in the plastic, but it costs a lot of money to test for it.
And by the way, the reason I don't comment on that is that most of my clients, that's not even an issue. And I'm not sure the science behind that yet. It might be that it's perfectly harmless. So I'm not actually going to comment on that today because it's really not part of our lawsuit, although it will be because we're challenging the law. But that's not where we are seeking to have this law deemed unconstitutional for overbroadness and vagueness. It's really the lead testing and the lead issues. Textiles, natural cotton fibers have never contained lead and won't contain lead, and there should certainly be an exemption for those things. And yet they're required to test. We have a lot of people in our group that purchase, shirts that have already been manufactured by big companies, and they silk screen or they add embroidery. Well, those things have never, at least with respect to the silk screening, if they were made in the U.S., wouldn't have contained lead and never would.
Well, Mike, how does something like this happen? I mean, this seems to me to be a pretty big issue. There's lots of people that use, that make products for children under the age of 12 that don't fit this description from what you're saying. How does this happen?
That's a great question, and I think my easy answer is I really don't know. But the bigger answer, and the answer that's more cynical, is that we've got some very powerful groups behind this legislation, and I don't want to badmouth those groups because ultimately their goal really is to protect children. But I could protect children by saying we're not going to allow cars anymore. You know how many kids die a year in car accidents? Why don't we just ban cars? Well,
right.
It would be really destructive to our economy, and I don't think that's the best way to save children's lives is to simply ban cars. It's the same thing here. We've got a lot of very large, powerful lobbying groups and organizations, the Consumer Products Union, for one, that are behind this legislation. And I don't think either they haven't read it carefully or they haven't thought this issue through to its logical conclusion as to how it's going to play in the real world, because they have put a lot of pressure on Congress and, in fact, on some bigger companies that have contacted me. They're interested in funding our lawsuit but not being named in it. Because they don't want to run afoul of some of these groups, because they know that, if some of these groups start boycotting these companies, it could really damage their bottom line. And these groups out there that are they're anti-lead and pro-protection, for, and children's groups and are really putting the screws to Congress, in particular members of Waxman's committee, to keep this legislation the way it is. And there's not a lot of organizations out there for the small business person, although that's changing now. They are getting more vocal. Mm-hmm. National Manufacturers Association, for example, or National Association of Manufacturers, I should say, is rightly concerned right now. But I think it passed through quietly because the bigger organizations were ones that are more geared toward the pro-consumer and didn't really look to what this would do to business. And I don't know how it got passed some of these trade associations, and I don't know why it took until, you know, very late December, early January for people to get wind of it.
Right.
One other thing I will comment on, though, that I think might answer the question partly is that in the past, major legislation like this that really is watershed legislation that changes the way things have been done for a long time,
mm-hmm.
there's always been a lot of lead time between the time that a law is passed and the time when its implementation goes into effect. I mean, look how long it's been since digital technology has been around, and yet we're looking at a deadline coming up in a few months for the conversion from analog to digital. That took years to do. Same with cell phones. This, though, you know, if you think about this, this was passed in August, and just a few months later, it's being implemented. Usually, it does take time for the word to get out, and I think that probably has something to do with it. There just hasn't been enough lead time.
Well, and it's, I don't know, it sounds like, I guess, the timing of it, too, with the economic meltdown and the election probably had some effect on the timing there, too. I just wonder about that. But now we can't do anything about that. We have to move forward, and that's where Attorney Kushner and his planned lawsuit comes in. So that was a great overview, and we're going to come back and ask you some more questions about how this law is going to impact some of your clients, and also what we can do as listeners and other small business owners who really want to link arms with you and do what we can to be helpful. So we're going to come back after our break, and we're going to be joined by some of Michael's clients and some small business owners who are affected by this law. This is Indie Business Radio. We'll be right back.
Why is everyone listening to GlobalTalkRadio.com? Because it's the future of talk radio. Every day, more and more people are finding internet radio as not just an alternative media, but as a replacement to traditional AM and FM broadcast stations. Internet radio offers a wider variety of programs, convenient on-demand listening that meets your schedule, and fewer commercial interruptions. And GlobalTalkRadio.com is already leading the way by matching this content with a highly targeted internet audience. GlobalTalkRadio.com offers its listeners one of the widest programming varieties on the internet, from business and finance to self-improvement, paranormal, health, literature, romance, politics, and more. There are also opportunities for prospective hosts who would like to host their own weekly or one-time talk shows. Want to learn more? Check us out at www.globaltalkradio.com and see the future of talk radio today.
Welcome back to Indie Business Radio. I'm Donna Maria, and we're here this afternoon with Attorney Michael Kushner of the Kushner Law Firm in Orange County, and he is working on a multi-party lawsuit to restrain or stop, at least temporarily, the enforcement of the Consumer Product Safety Improvement Act. And Michael just gave us a great overview of the act, what it is intended to do, and really some of its unintended consequences, which are adversely impacting small business owners without any real consumer benefit to speak of. So we want to talk with some of those small business owners, and to help us do that, we've got a couple of people. Let me start with Rochelle Sweetser Dressler, whose name I probably just totally demolished. But Rochelle is the owner of a small business that manufactures clothing items for children. Rochelle, welcome to the show.
Good morning.
Tell us a little bit, Rochelle, about how you found out about this law and how you feel it would affect your business if it goes into effect as is.
I found out about the law on January 4th. I received an email from one of the boutiques that I sell my items to. She wanted to know if I'd heard about this law and if it was if it was accurate, or if it was maybe just a rumor that was going around. So I started to do some research regarding it and found out that it absolutely was not false, that it is truly a new law that is going to be implemented tomorrow. And I've just been doing what I can to find out about how it affects me, and in the last month, just been very educated about what this is going to do to the future of my business. And in essence, it will definitely shut me down. I produce products that are sometimes in quantities of 4, 5, or 6 when I'm doing custom orders for a store, or when I in silk screening, I will sometimes do items in the quantities of maybe 24 to 100 pieces. I'm all for component testing, but when I go to reproduce the same item maybe in 6 months, because it's just not financially feasible for me to do large quantities at one time, I would then have to retest that same item when the components are identical to what I did maybe 6 months prior. Or when I do those custom orders, I can't afford this $350 plus test that would be required for those small custom pieces.
And so make sure I want to make sure I tell everyone your name properly. It's Rochelle Dressler Sweetser of Monkey
yes.
Baby Clothes. So, Rochelle, what you're describing is a very distinct difference between how your business operates and how Michael described earlier on a large business operates. When 1,000 or thousands upon thousands of units at one time can be made, there's essentially one test or maybe a small number of tests, right, Michael, for all of those products. And for people who make them by hand or in very small quantities, a law that requires every product to be tested means almost literally that every individual one has to be tested.
Correct.
Well, I'm not sure that's the case. It's each SKU line. For example, let's say you go and you manufacture, using Rochelle's example, let's say she gets 20 or 30 shirts made at a time. There would have to be component testing for that SKU, for that order of 20 or 30 shirts. Even if she were to then, you know, go back a month later and say, I need another 50, she would have to test that next 50, you know, you test a one or whatever as a sample, she would have to go and test it again, even though it's the exact same thing.
And that applies even if she gets the components from the same suppliers?
Right. Yeah. That's the way it reads.
Okay.
And that might not be the way that they intended it to, but that's the point of the challenge here. That's the way it reads. And that's what needs to be changed. That's just one item that is so grossly overbroad and can have such an amazing or staggeringly damaging impact on people. And when I was talking before about amortizing the cost, you know, if you're a big company like Target or Walmart or, you know, not even there, let's say you're Hurley or Volcom or any of the other companies that make skateboards and other kind of, you know, that kind of equipment for you know, kids under 12, you know, they're going to make things in the tune of hundreds of thousands or even millions of items. It adds very little to the cost,
right,
no matter how much it is. But if you're a small business and you're making, you know, 10, 20, 50, 100, or 1,000, then that same testing with the same price, doesn't matter who you are, is going to add a lot more to your price line, and you're going to price yourself out of the market.
Right.
And so we're going to lose a lot of options.
Right, right, and that's such a good point, that the smaller companies, it just doesn't sound like this kind of manufacturing was considered.
I don't think
right.
so at all.
So, Rochelle, I know you and some of your colleagues have started a website, and you're at reformcpsia.org, which I've visited on numerous occasions, and it seems to update almost every day something new about the law or what I know the Consumer Product Safety Commission has been back and forth with, you know, releasing press releases and updates and things like that. But tell me, Rochelle and Michael as well, what has happened in just the advocacy? I mean, I'm sure some people have, you know, called the congressperson's offices. I know Michael mentioned some activity in Senator DeMint's office. But what has been the response? Is there any acknowledgement of this as an issue at all?
Well, for myself, and I know Maureen is on the phone, and she's had several conversations with members in her local and state government. But when I called my representative, I only got as far as assistants who would take messages. And then I did receive a form letter from Feinstein's office stating that they were in support of this law, which to me basically says that they didn't hear my concern. They were not seeing what my specific needs were that are the needs of thousands across the country.
Right.
So, you know, I support the law or the goal of the law as well. I'm a parent. We all want our children safe. However, somebody needs to listen to the specific needs of small business, medium business, large-sized business. You know, the testing, the way that the law is written, none of us should have to meet that kind of certification unnecessarily, and that's what this is imposing on all of us. But I really have not gotten very far with the local and state government officials that I've tried to reach.
Well, and I'm sure it doesn't help that the time is so compressed as well. We also have Marina from Chocolate Soup Toys with us this afternoon, and Marina owns a retail store, so we've been talking about how this affects manufacturers. So now we have an opportunity to hear from someone that's, you know, one step removed from that. Welcome to Indie Business Radio, Marina.
Thank you. Thank you, Donna Maria.
Tell us how, as a retailer, this affects your ability to get the kind of products in your store that your customers want to buy.
Yeah, thank you. Well, I have a very unique store with a unique mix of products. I do some children's consignment clothing, but I also focus a lot on locally made goods and USA-made goods, and the focus is on all-natural toys, because this business grew out of my commitment towards providing families with safe choices for their children, and also supporting local artists and artisans who were doing that.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, of course, the consignment clothing aspect is problematic because the cost of testing, it by far exceeds you know, what I'm selling the clothing for. And then for the local people who are doing things on small scale, sometimes one at a time, I have a doll maker who hand sews beautiful dolls with organic cotton cloth skin. The hair is either wool or mohair,
mm-hmm.
products both, and she stuffs these dolls with wool. And there's nothing in them that could be contaminated by lead or phthalates, just
right.
by the very nature of the materials, and she won't be able. The cost of testing far exceeds the cost of the retail price of the dolls. She's gotten estimates that it may cost her $4,000 to $5,000 to test the doll, and because each one is unique, she does custom work. Each item is a batch, and she just. She would be unable to continue to do this in any way that's legal, but with the law written the way it is. Also, the smaller companies and the craftspeople in the USA,
mm-hmm.
for them to include the testing for their products would pump up their overhead, their cost, and that would impact the retail mm-hmm. cost. And I really feel like consumers have really hit the limit of what they're going to pay for things, especially with the economy in its current
mm-hmm. Now, Michael, let me ask you a question about that, too, because everybody has said, and of course we all agree here, that if there is a law that will save people's lives and protect people, that we need to look at it, you know, at implementing it, and we also, of course, need to look at how to implement it. So that's one thing. But, Michael, tell us, how is it that this law overreaches? In other words, we all say that it's good to protect children, and everyone agrees with that, but how could this law have been implemented so that the goals were achieved, that is, children were protected, without adversely affecting small businesses with no corresponding consumer benefit?
Well, that's a difficult question. I will say, you know, if you were to look at, for example, Senator DeMint's amendment,
right.
if it had been written pursuant to the way he's amended it, it would have been a lot better. I think one of the things they could have done was specified who has to do the testing on the product. And once the product is tested, if nothing changes, does it need to be tested again?
Okay.
That would eliminate a lot of the problem right there. So, for example, if they were to say, you've got to test that zipper before you can sell it. Well, I would say, you know, you have the manufacturer of the zipper have it tested. You know, that he provides some certification that doesn't contain lead beyond whatever the legal limits are, and that anybody that used that zipper for whatever reason in any product they were to create afterwards wouldn't need to have it tested because the zipper itself was already tested.
Right.
The way the law reads, you know, a zipper manufacturer needs to test the zipper, and anybody that uses the zipper to create another product, you know, let's say you were to take that zipper and start making little, you know, purses with pockets, and you use the zipper to make a pocket on a purse. Well, now you have a new, you know, you have a new product now. You got to get tested. And I'm not even commenting on what to do with the fabric of the purse. I'm just using the zipper example. But so if they were to specify, you know, the testing at the manufacturing stage, that would eliminate it because I don't think the zipper is going to acquire lead anywhere.
Right.
So once it's tested, it's been tested.
That's a good point. So if it's already been tested, it doesn't need to be tested again.
Right. Or using our example we used before with Rochelle's company, you know, when she, you know, she orders, let's say she orders shirts from ABC Shirt Company here in America, and then, you know, gets them silk screened. Whether she makes 50 now or, you know, 100, when she wants to make that same shirt again and she goes to the same place to get it done, if it's been tested, it's been tested. That begs the question, though. What needs to be tested should have been more specified in the law. As I said at the beginning, in the United States, I don't think it's been legal to have lead in paint for you know, since I was a kid, for 30 years, let's say. So if you're getting, you're using paint that's you know, manufactured in the United States, or you're using a, you know, made in the USA manufactured to silk screen your shirts with American-made paint, why does it need to be tested at all? Why does it require that expensive certification? You know, if the paint itself doesn't contain lead, it's not going to contain lead if you slap it on a shirt.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Tell me, what is it that the lawsuit will, when will it be filed, and what is the relief that will be requested?
Well, we're waiting till we get a certain number of members before we file, and that was a way to keep costs down per member. So when we have a certain amount, and I won't announce that number on the air, but when we hit that number, we're going to go ahead and file. And we're not seeking money damages here. I mean, we will, of course, seek our attorney's fees. But that's not the goal here. The goal is to have the law declared unconstitutional based on overbroadness and vagueness. We want this law to be more surgically written, more directly tailored to meet the goal that has been expressed, which is to lower, you know, our children's exposure to lead. And this law, the way it's written, and just in the few ways we've described so far, is just so overbroad and so burdensome that you could tailor it. You could surgically, mm-hmm. And I use the word surgical on purpose, you could surgically specify a lot more, make this law a lot more specific and get the exact same goal met than just leaving it the way it is and destroying, you know, billions of dollars in our economy right now at the very wrong time. When everybody's 401ks are trashed and when everybody's retirements are gone and their houses are upside down, and this is a national phenomenon here, and this is the wrong time for a badly written law to go into effect. It's just the perfect storm of, I had used the term the perfect storm of stupidity, and I don't like to use that, so I'm going to try to refrain from that, but that's really what it was.
Right. Those are some really good points, too, and I want to explore those after our next break, because, you know, as Michael's saying, in a day and age when manufacturing is dwindling in this country, we've got Rochelle and Marina, who owns a retail store that supports businesses like hers that are manufacturing and are actually supporting their families in a time when the ways to do that in a traditional fashion are not as plentiful as they used to be. So we're going to come back and talk a little more about those kinds of impacts, and then ask Michael again, you know, to share a little bit more about what we can do as listeners and other small business owners to help his efforts to change how Congress looks at this issue. This is Indy Business Radio. We'll be right back.
Want to stay on top of what's new in the radio industry? Sign up for a free subscription to the Future of Talk Radio, available exclusively to listeners of globaltalkradio.com, and find out what's new in the world of online radio. Listeners can find out about new shows and special guests. People with something special to offer can find out how to become a guest and how to prepare for an interview. And prospective hosts will find a valuable resource for everything from planning their new program to selecting topics and guests, recouping expenses by selling advertising, and more. Sign up today for your free subscription to the Future of Talk Radio by visiting www.globaltalkradio.com and learn about the future of talk radio today.
Back to Indie Business Radio. We're here this afternoon discussing the implementation of the Consumer Product Safety Improvement Act. And before we took our break, we were talking about how our economy and the state that it's in right now is exactly the wrong time to consider a law that really doesn't offer any consumer benefits to speak of as it concerns the small businesses that are impacted by it. And Rochelle, you have some information to share that really, you know, sort of describes the far-reaching effects of this law and how it would impact our ability as parents to purchase other kinds of products that we might not even think about that would be affected by this. Tell us about that.
Well, I one of my children is 12 years old, so when I think about, you know, the things that she uses or participates in, some of the things that I would not have initially considered besides my own business would be, you know, Girl Scout uniforms and the patches that go on the Girl Scout uniforms, which are so personalized and tailored to an individual troop, or my son's karate uniform and his soccer uniform, things that have never created incident or been a threat to our children are now going to have to be tested, or my children's school uniform. So, you know, I think of all of those things that we might not initially consider when we're just talking about how this affects our business. But, you know, something else that comes to mind are the places where I get my hang tags printed and my labels and the web designers that specialize in children's web design and the silk screeners. This is so far-reaching that it goes beyond just our specific manufacturing and retail needs, but it also is going to have a domino effect on the other businesses that that support what we do, the shipping supplies, just all kinds of things that are going to feel the impact. If we go out of business, they are in turn going to be limited with their business as well.
And that's a really good point, Michael, because we've all noticed in the past 5 years, I mean, Rochelle's a mom, I'm a mom, you're a parent, we are all, and perhaps Marina is as well, or certainly some of her customers and the manufacturers that she does business with are, we have all noticed a sharp increase in the number of people that are starting their own businesses. And so what Rochelle is describing is really important to remember here, right? And that is that all of the support mechanisms that have come into place to support these businesses are also at risk by a law that doesn't have any consumer benefit, really, where these small manufacturers are concerned.
Well, I agree with that. In fact, I'll tell you this, and this might surprise some people, but if you look at statistics, when we think of, you know, big companies like Walmart and Target and we think, okay, it's companies like these, you know, IBM and Dell and Intel that employ most of the people in this country, and that's just not true. Most people in this country are employed by small businesses with 10 employees or less.
Mm-hmm.
The vast majority of this country's wealth, whether through products or the service industry, come from companies that are 10 people or less, not the big companies. And you are threatening, with this law as written currently, are threatening to drive a significant sector of those small businesses out of business. And if you do that, you're gonna have, as Rochelle was saying, you're gonna have a ripple effect on other parts of the economy. You know, she said shipping. That was a great idea. I didn't even think of that until she said that. But if you think about all the stuff all the small manufacturers that sell their things on eBay, where everything is shipped, or where I can't tell you specifically, you know, how much Rochelle uses UPS or FedEx or the U.S. Mail, but I can certainly tell you some of our clients rely almost exclusively on delivering their product via some sort of shipping method, and that's, you know, those companies are gonna experience a huge downtrend, I think, because we're talking about tens of thousands of companies and billions of dollars And I don't think it's a small, I don't think it's a small thing here. This is a very, very big deal.
Right. And so, Michael, tell us exactly what is it that your suit is anticipated. I know it hasn't been filed yet, but what do you anticipate at this point that you'll be actually asking a court to do?
Well, we were going to go in and ask for a restraining order. We were going to seek injunctive relief to prevent its enforcement. But, you know, the CPSC has come out with a stay, which is good until it's challenged in court and then overturned. But as it stands now, you know, starting tomorrow, there'll be a stay on the requirement for testing, although people are still going to be subject to the new law's levels. So if it turned out your product did go over the level, you could be in a lot of trouble. So we're not seeking a restraining order at this time. We are seeking, though, we are challenging the law of constitutionality. So we're going to be suing to have the court declare the Act of 2008 to be unconstitutional. And basically, you know, in shorthand, is to force Congress to go back and start over again and do this right. You know, and try it again. And let's get a lost time into law.
Is that what Senator DeMint's bill asked for, is to go back and look at it again and tweak it so that it's done right?
Well, Senator DeMint's bill, it is. Senator DeMint's bill was basically an amendment. You know, it's kind of a Band-Aid approach to try to amend the things that were wrong with the bill, but it only went to a certain extent. But he's got the right idea. I actually could pull it up. I was looking at it a few minutes ago as Rochelle was talking, and I closed it now. So I don't want to have to look for it while we're on the radio. But what he was actually tighten up some of the big loopholes that we've been talking about.
Right, right. So the gist of it is to really consider things that it would have been nice if they had considered before, but now that they have an opportunity, you know, let's just do it.
Right. Let's do the law. Let's protect our children, but let's do it smart.
Right. Wow. It's amazing to me that it came to this under circumstances that just seem so clear to me. But, you know, I'm a small business owner, and I just wonder the extent to which it's a new way of having to regulate. Do you think, Michael, that's a part of it? It's just, you know, it's always been regulation as usual. There's a lot of very large companies that pay a lot of money to be on wire services and, you know, federal registers and things where they get heads up about these issues. And now that there are so many smaller participants in traditionally large regulated industries, there's got to be some consideration for that. What do you think of
I'm not sure about that. My opinion is more along the lines, and I'm maybe a little more cynical, but my opinion is more along the lines that we, you know, in this country, we routinely go from one extreme to another.
Uh-huh.
You know, you look at the big scare coming in. I don't know if you remember a few years ago when there was a big scare about Alar, the chemical that was, you know, sprayed on apples to help preserve apples. There was this big push to pull apples from our schools and protect our children, and the science behind that was really bad, and it ended up doing more harm than good because, it, you know, really, kids should be eating more vegetables and fruits, and we wouldn't have an obese population of children like we do now if they ate more of those. But I think we go from one extreme to another. Something happens, like you get these toys coming in from China that have lead, and all of a sudden everybody jumps to the other side of the pendulum and says, we got to get something done fast, and they ran this thing through, and I think that's what happened. I don't think it was thought out as clearly as it should have been. They should have thought this through and said, how do we best solve a legitimate problem? We don't want our kids exposed to lead. Let's figure out how to solve this. And they didn't do that. What they did was they threw the baby out with the bathwater. And I'll note one other thing. I am aware of no scares in the last couple of years from toys or items designed for children that were manufactured here. They all came from other countries, China being one of them, because their standards there are a lot different than ours.
Well, that's a really good point, too, is that we have heard some issues with respect to products that are imported and other things, but nothing where the products that Rochelle and Marina are talking about are concerned.
I'm aware of no case where any of these things sold in these small children's stores, these boutiques, have contained lead.
Right, and in fact, as the demand for them grows, right, Rochelle and Marina, you guys have businesses that serve the kinds of customers that want these products. Are you seeing the desire for them increasing?
I would say yes, absolutely. I mean, with every scare that was reported of, you know, imported toys, more and more parents and certainly grandparents would come in, and what I would hear is that, you know, my son doesn't want any more toys from China. They don't trust them. we know that you have toys made in the USA, you know, show us what you have. And that was really great. I mean, not only, you know, for my business, but for all of those small businesses and those individuals who are producing toys with that commitment towards natural, safe toy.
Right.
And I think that's really important to note, is that the people who are being hit the hardest by this law are the people who had that intent of keeping our children safe from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And the parents who are looking for a certain type of toy,
right,
because they trust that type of toy, or they trust the clothing,
mm-hmm,
or even, I mean, this certainly would be some of Rochelle's customers, not only for the style of what she produces, but there are folks out there who want to be very sustainable, and they would rather buy something that is already in existence, has already been produced and used maybe once or twice, so as not to continue, like, rampant consumerism.
Right.
And that's a lot of what I get as well for the clothing. People are happy to say, wow, this is already in existence, I'd like to purchase it for my child. And I think the law just completely
mm-hmm,
discounts any of that.
Donna Maria, if I could just add to that, I agree with everything that she said, and it's accurate in my opinion. But to add to that, another situation here is, if this law were to be implemented and enforced in the manner in which Congress apparently has sought to enforce it, we're going to look at a lot of, as these businesses go out of business because they simply can't afford that expensive testing, they can't afford to do that, you're going to have a lot less options as a consumer. A lot less options. You know, you're not going to get the very unique boutique style, funny and pithy, you know, shirts that Monkey Baby produces, or that some of our other clients, you know, that are involved in this suit are produced. You're going to have to go to Target and Walmart and some of the bigger companies and buy what they have. You're going to knock out a lot of options for consumers.
Well, and that's never good, because that limits our choices, and we'd rather have more.
Well,
fewer, particularly when it can be done in a way that doesn't hurt it.
Especially because most of Walmart's stuff's made in the Philippines and in China and, you know, out of the country. That's the funny part. That's the ironic part.
Right.
Is that,
so, Michael, what happens tomorrow when you said that the law is still in effect, but the testing has been temporarily suspended, but if your products are tested and they violate the law, then I guess you could be held to the standard, but you don't have to actually go out and do the testing. Are there any other things that go into effect tomorrow, even with the quote-unquote, you know, the enforcement issues?
I got to tell you, it's very hard to say. Rochelle has probably got a better answer for that than I do, simply because she's on the CPSC website every day, and I'm not. You know, I'm doing other things and preparing this.
Right.
She's probably in a better position to answer that.
Rochelle, other than that, I mean, the testing has been temporarily suspended anyway. What happens tomorrow for your business?
Well, here's my concern with the announcement of this day. There are some stores who will continue to buy from me and know that, you know, because of our history, they know my products are safe, they know the customers come back and want my items.
Right.
My problem is when I am trying to sell and grow my business to a showroom or to a new local boutique, they don't know if they want to buy from me, because they don't want the repercussions of this law coming back on them in any way, because we're still liable. They're liable, I'm liable. Even though I don't have to provide a certificate, they may not buy from me because I don't have one, and they just don't want the responsibility of the potential liability that I have and that they may share.
Right. And, Don Maria, I'll add this. The problem is, even if Rochelle had the money and the desire or the ability or the willingness to go out and get the testing for every single line that she has, the fact is this has been implemented so quickly that there are not enough certified labs out there that can do this testing.
Wow.
They're not there.
That's too bad. And that's a whole nother. There's a whole nother issue, and I imagine there are many more that we don't have time to get to on the show today. Not to mention the people who are thinking about starting a business, who won't start one to produce some products that we would all enjoy, if they have this confusion. So I hope that your efforts at the website, Rochelle and Marina, and certainly what Michael is doing on the legal end, and other people I know are working on blogs all over the place that are spreading the word. So tell us, listeners, what can we do to help the cause? What can we do, even if we don't make products that are affected or have a store, what can we do to support you? Michael, what can we do?
The one thing I'm going to tell people to do, anybody that's listening to this, is go to that website, reformcpsia.org.
Okay.
And if you have a bone in this fight, you need to step up and help. When we file this thing, you know, the legal fees are divided by how many members there are in the group.
Mm-hmm.
Just using the number 100 as an example, if we have 100 people, then everybody there is paying $3.20 an hour for the attorney.
Wow.
That's better than you pay, that's less than you pay a babysitter. That's less than you pay somebody to walk your dogs for you, you know, in your neighborhood, a local kid to walk your dogs for you in your neighborhood. So we need people to step up. And what's happening, I think a lot of people are scared. The economy is scary out there, mm-hmm. and they're worried about legal fees. And the thing is, when you divide it, with, you know, if everybody stands united, it's easy to do. Everybody can now afford their lawyer. But if you leave it to a small group of people, you know, 5, 10, 15, 20 people to handle your problem, you're not going to get resolved. And, you know, I hate to say it this way, but you kind of deserve what you get if you don't stand up and fight. And anybody that's got a business that's affected by this law that agrees with the things that we're saying here should join our crusade, should join it, get on the website, read the information, contact Rochelle, contact Don, who runs that website,
right.
and find out how you can get involved. Because
can retailers who are listening, anybody that owns a store that sells these products, can they you know, have a sheet at the register to collect the names and you know, email addresses of people that might be interested and somehow get onto your website and send that information to you, Rochelle?
Absolutely. You know, my email, my personal information, and Dawn's as well is listed on the website. She and I are working from 4 o'clock in the morning until 10 o'clock at night, taking phone calls and answering questions via email. We are doing the best that we can to make sure that everybody's concern or question has been answered. So they can find us very, very easily by going to that website, and we literally are working. I've set my business aside for the past month so that I can educate people on why this is important, why it does affect them, and why they are not safe just because this day has been announced.
Do a thing. The state doesn't do anything except it doesn't make you have a certificate. But like Rochelle said, there are businesses out there that will not, you know, that might not take your stuff without that certificate. So,
I'd like to point out also,
I certainly don't want that to happen. We're out of town, guys. Okay. Out of time. I want to encourage everyone to go to reformcpsia.org, where Rochelle and her team of committed professionals are there to help spread the word and also feed into Michael Kushner's efforts, KushnerLawFirm.com, for more information about what he's doing, and also Marina at ChocolateSoupToys.com. This is an opportunity for small business owners from all walks of life, from all segments of our economy, to join together and really help to encourage and support each other in an effort. And certainly, Michael, I love that analogy, $3.20 an hour for an attorney like you. We really need to think about working together to, you know, get these efforts, you know, get all the professional services in a way that we can pay for them. And I really appreciate you mentioning that, because that's really important for people to understand. Thank you so much, Michael Kushner of Kushner Law Firm, Rochelle Dressler-Sweetzer of Monkey Baby Clothes, and Marina at Chocolate Soup Toys. www.reformcpsia.org is the website. Get over there, tell your friends, get on Twitter, spread the word. This is important. I'll see you next week on Indie Business Radio. In the meantime, enjoy your life, build your business, and have your way.
You're listening to GlobalTalkRadio.com.